two new Cadillacs in the driveway, and if your kids were wearing designer clothes, and if you had a big swimming pool in the back corner of that house that had a three-hole putting green around it, and little tiki torches and palm trees, that your life would be okay. If you're a drunk the way I'm a drunk, I'm here to tell you that that ain't going to happen, because it didn't happen to me, because I had all of those things. I used to go on listing appointments and stuff. I wore enough gold chains and diamonds, I looked like a damn pimp going out. I looked like a gigolo. And I had a $3,000 a month booze habit, and I didn't have a problem drinking. And I continued to drink and act crazy and abuse that family, and money didn't fix it. Money didn't change what was inside me. Money didn't change those feelings. Money didn't change the guilt. Money didn't feel the degrading things I was doing. Money didn't change those things. I was still the same Frank Jones. And I thought that alcohol would do it, but all alcohol did was shut my head off, and I started getting sicker from alcohol. And I started urinating and crapping blood now. And I started turning yellow. And I couldn't figure out what the hell my problem was. If you'd have told me, come up and said, Jones, your problem's drinking, I'd have told you you're crazy. If I could get a little more money. Hell, I only made $128,000 in 1976. I just need some more money. If I could get another woman, a bigger car, maybe I need a Rolls Royce. I need a house on a half acre, not a quarter acre. I need a house with 26 rooms, not 16, for Christ's sakes. Don't tell me about drinking. And I just get crazy, and alcohol wasn't a problem. And you know, I had a 42-inch waist, and I didn't know what my problem was, so I changed brands of cigarettes. Made sense to me. Jesus, I got to tell you, I was so stupid when I was drinking, I thought denial was a river in Egypt. I changed brands of cigarettes. I went from Old Gold to Viceroy. I switched to Winston. Winston turned my skin yellow and made my gums bleed. I didn't know what in the hell was wrong. I went back to Camel. I stood there at the age of 36 years old, and everything I'd wanted to be all my life, that house on a quarter acre was gone. The house was gone. The two Cadillacs were gone. My wife and kids moved up with her parents into a trailer in San Jose, California. And everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone, and I didn't know what in the hell my problem was. All I wanted to do all my life is be like my father. He's a loving man, a gentle man. And he raised us kids. And he was just an example of what an American husband and father should be. And that's what I wanted to be. And I didn't know where in the hell I went wrong. I didn't know what my problem was. Everything I own now was in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And that's a hell of a note for a police officer. And I didn't know what my problem was. And I continued to drink and get crazy. And this woman finally took me into her house, and I nailed her window shut because they were out to get me, and I didn't even know who in the hell they were. And I was carrying a .357 6-inch Magnum and a butcher knife, and I was crazy, and I was in her closet, and I wouldn't eat, and I just drank, and I was nuts. And I didn't know what in the hell my problem was. And I went to a doctor because I was starting to hemorrhage and have a lot of blood escaping from my body. And I went to the doctor, and he called me in after this examination. He said, Mr. Jones, he said, I got to tell you, you're 36-year-old. And he says, you're an alcoholic. He says, you're dying. He says, you've got cirrhosis of the liver, a hole in your throat from dry heaves. You've got a lung and stomach infection and all these things that we get when we're a chronic drunk the way I am. And you know what I felt when he told me that? I felt relief. I told him, thank you. I wanted to die. I didn't have the guts to commit suicide. I was a wimp. And I told him, thank you. And he said, if you don't quit drinking, you'll die within 6 months. And I walked out to that stolen car, and I picked the beer up off the floorboard, and I drove to a liquor store, and I bought a case of beer and a fifth of whiskey, and drove back to Los Angeles. And I started drinking as hard and as fast as I could because I wanted to die, and I didn't know how. And I was just tired. And I walked around this woman's house talking to myself, and one day I was sitting in her bedroom, and I just vomited a pool of blood on her floor, and I had a Cock .357 Magnum on her nightstand, and I was going to kill her and her three kids, and then kill myself because the world outside these rooms sucked. And I couldn't find an answer to it, and I was going nuts. And I got to tell you how God works in my life when I don't believe in God. You see, I hadn't made any contact with my parents in over 4 years. You see, my parents are old and they're retired, and they vacation in Florida in a different spot every year. They go to Orlando or Dade County or Miami or someplace, and they just get a little apartment, and they stay there for the winter. And I hadn't talked to them in 4 years. Last time they seen me, I'd been working for my brother. I was drunk. And I told him if he didn't give me his money, I'd kill him and burn his house down. And I showed up in the morning with a can of gas, a gun, and an attack dog. He gave me some money, and I split to California. And I hadn't seen or talked to him in 4 years. And I am sitting on her bed, and I take that cocked gun, and I put it in my mouth, and I didn't have the guts to pull the trigger. And I was just mad. And I picked that telephone up, and I dialed a telephone number, and on the other end of that telephone, my father answered the telephone. And you know, I don't know how that happened. I do today. I didn't then. You see, I had a loving God that was watching over me, and I don't know where that number come from, except that God provided that number for me. And that may sound hokey or hinky to you, but I didn't know where my parents were. And my dad asked me what the problem was, and I told him that I'm an alcoholic and I'm dying, and I need a hospital. And I had never surrendered in my life. I have been through the best psychological warfare school the Marine Corps has got. I've been through the best POW schools and training that the military's got, and I can stand a lot of physical pain. I can handle a lot of pain. But I was history, man. I was tired, and I had alcohol up to my eyebrows. And he got the phone number where I was, and to make a long story short, I ended up in a hospital in Indiana. And when they took me in that hospital, they lashed me down to a bed, and I didn't understand that. And they started giving me shots of my vitamin B and magnesium to help me with my withdrawals, because they told me I was physically addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. And they told me I was supposed to get 5 or 6 of these shots, and I ended up getting 24 of them. And I had the hallucinations and the DTs, and they called my wife in California, this doctor did. And he said, I suggest that you fly back to Indiana and be with your husband. We think he's going to die before he gets through these DTs. You want to know what my wife said? Let that son of a bitch die. I was crushed. I don't know what you're laughing at. I didn't die. They're not doing this with mirrors up here. This isn't a videotape. I didn't die. And they unlashed me from that bed, and they cleared up my physical ailments, and they arrested the infections and diseases I had inside me. And this hospital is going to be kind of weird. It is for the people in California when they hear this part of it anyway. That hospital wasn't interested in my money. What they was interested in that is I go to AA meetings. And it was mandatory that if you're in this hospital that you go to 2 meetings a day. And that you sit there and you listen. And I went to those AA meetings in that hospital. And what I heard was, is go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings if you want to take a drink. If you want to drink, go to AA. Go to AA for 90 days. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you want to drink, go to AA. And I thought, if I want to drink, I'll go to AA. And if I want to drink, okay, I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And you know, I couldn't remember the words to the Lord's Prayer. I couldn't remember my kids' names or where they were at. I couldn't remember a lot of things, and I thought I had brain damage, and I walked with a limp, and I stuttered, and I had a speech impediment, and I didn't know what my problem was. But I didn't desire to take a drink, and I haven't had a desire to take a drink since that first day in there. Haven't had it. But I kept hearing that. That ain't a big deal. That ain't a big deal. I got worse. You see, I didn't go to AA. They said go to AA if you want to drink. But you see, I did all the things in that hospital I was supposed to do, and when I walked out those 2 glass doors, I stood out there in that Indiana sunlight, and what happened was I stood out there stark raving sober, and I had no desire to take alcohol into my body. But what happened was is all 10 of the commandments I had busted come walking down and got up on my chest and started choking me out. And all the disrespect and all the stealing, lying, and cheating I had done with my parents come down and started choking me out. And all the abuse I had heaped on those 2 wives and 4 kids came down that sidewalk and got up on my chest. And all the things I'd done in Vietnam and in that city that I was a cop in come down and started choking me out. And I thought I was going to go crazy, and suicide became the only answer. Unless I felt pretty good about me, and then I thought maybe I'd kill you. You see, homicide or suicide's the only thing I understood. I didn't desire to take a drink, so I'm not going to AA. I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings because I don't want to drink. And I heard them say, if you want to drink, go to AA. And I got to tell you this, if you're new or used out there tonight, that if you are intense when you quit drinking, I got to tell you, what happened to me might happen to you if you do what I did. If you're a little bit tense, if you get out here on this freeway and people that drive in front of you in the fast lane at 45 and 50 make you crazy, are you going to grocery stores and the list says 10 items or less cash only? And some dummy in front of you has got 15 items and a checkbook out. If that makes you crazy, and you get a little bit tense about that, the way I get intense about it, what happened to me might happen to you. After 13 months of no Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, I didn't go to AA. I got my wife and kids back. We moved into a garage in Newhall, California. We slept on the floor and ate out of a styrofoam chest. And my wife said that I got a lot worse sober than I ever was drinking. I had a nervous breakdown. I flipped out. All my grapes were squashed. Squashed all my bananas. I just went nuts. I don't know why. I wasn't drinking. I was still lying, cheating, stealing, validating myself with another woman, driving a stolen car, abusing that family, carrying a gun, hanging out in the bars, drinking club soda with a lime twist. And I went cuckoo. I don't understand it. Beats the hell out of me. I was in an office one day. This guy come by and says, "Hey, Jones, how you doing?" I thought that was a personal question. I didn't think it was any of his business. And I grabbed him by the throat. And I pulled him over on the desk. And I told him, "How in the hell do you think I'm doing?" And I flipped out. I just went crazy. And these guys come running over there. And they started trying to pull me off of him. And I was kicking and screaming and slobbering and nuts. And I got to tell you how God works in my life. You see, I got to be body slammed. I don't get subtle messages. You can't tell me bring the body and the mind will follow. That's bull. It don't work for me. You can't tell me something and expect me to do it. You got to beat me. You got to abuse me. You got to drag me behind a semi-truck. You got to get the message through. But there was a loving God in that office that day because there was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that man walked up to me and laid a card down, and they're holding me, and I'm crying and screaming. And on that card was the number of a man. And he said, "I know what's wrong with you," but he said, "I can't help you." He said, "I suggest that you call this man." And I couldn't call him. I was crazy, and I was just too nuts. And I just got nutter and nuttier and nuttier. And finally, one day, that man called for me. And I finally went down to see this man, and I drove my stolen car down there. And I walked into his office, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And I cried. And what that man explained to me that day was is that I didn't have a problem with drinking. He told me that you haven't had a drink in 13 months. He says you've got a problem with living. And he said, "What I suggest to you is that you find a living answer to your living problem in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he told me that I needed to become committed to these meetings. He told me that I had to do certain things. And I just sit there and cried when he talked to me. He told me that I had to come to these meetings and I had to sit in the front row. He told me that I had to take the cotton out of my ears and I had to put it in my mouth. He told me I had to listen. He suggested to me that I start reading the big book. And he told me that for me, I should read the black part and not the white. He told me that I had to start believing in a God. He said, "You know what? Somebody hangs that moon out there at night and they take it down in the morning," and he said, "it's not you." He told me that I had to get down on my knees at night and I had to thank God for keeping me sober and for having a good day. He told me when you get up in the morning, he said, "Roll out of your sleeping bag and get on your knees and ask God to keep you sober that day." And I listened to the things that that man was telling me. You see, he was right. He was right that I have a living problem. I don't have a drinking problem. I haven't had a drink for a long time. It's been almost 9 years. But I can tell you this, that I've been to a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and at no time have I ever seen anybody sit here and drink a bourbon and water. I haven't seen anybody come in here and pop the top on a bud. So I guess that in here it just don't deal with drinking problems because I haven't seen any. And he's been right because I started coming to these meetings and what I seen was people learning how to live. He told me that what I had to do is I had to start doing a lot of things. He said, "You have to get commitments at the meetings." He told me, "You have to make the meeting yours." He said, "Don't let the meeting be theirs." He said, "Because when it's their meetings, you don't have to go to it. You can find reasons not to show up." He said, "You get commitments at the meetings." And he said, "I don't want you getting any high-profile commitments." He said, "I want you to clean up or empty the trash or sweep the floors or something." He said, "I want you to make the meeting yours so you're there every night." And he said, "I want you to go to a meeting every night." And he said, "I want you to show up unless there's a death in the family and it's yours." And you see, I understood that. And he told me that I had to start doing these things. And what I did was, is he told me to go to a meeting that night. And when I stood up to leave his office, I was still crying. And he come around from behind his desk and he put his arms around me. And you know, when I look into that man's eyes, I knew something that day that I hadn't known for a long time. I knew that he knew me and I trusted that man. And I don't know why I did, but I did. And he told me to take my pack off. And he says, "You don't have to hurt yourself anymore if you don't want to." He says, "You don't ever have to take another drink." And he says, "You can get comfortable if you start working these 12 steps and you start doing it in your daily life." And he says, you don't have to hurt yourself anymore. And he just hugged me. And I just stood there and cried. And I walked out of his office that day, and I went to a meeting that night. And I did what that man told me to do. I sat in the front row. And when I got there, he told me that I should shake hands. And I stuck my hand out, and I wasn't interested in knowing you. I wasn't interested in knowing you because you hadn't done the things I had done. You hadn't abused the people that I had abused. You hadn't done the things overseas I had done. You didn't drink the way I drank. You didn't do your family the way I'd done my family. I looked at every excuse not to like you or be around you. But I was hurting so bad, and I trusted that man so much that I stuck my hand out, and I did what he told me to do. And what I did, what happened to me when I come into these meetings, as I walked through the door, none of you has walked up to me and said, hey, where you been? What kind of car are you driving? What kind of job you got? How'd you treat your family? You didn't do any of those things. What you did was is you stuck your hand out to me and you said, you're welcome here. Why don't you get a cup of coffee and sit down? And what you did more than that is you showed me by your example how Alcoholics Anonymous worked. You see, you read the steps to me in chapter 5. You read the steps to me and you read the traditions to me. And I heard them now. And I didn't understand them. And you knew that I might have been a hard study because you have been where I've been, and I didn't know that. And what you did was is you set an example for me to follow. I didn't listen to your words, I watched you. I watched you like I've watched you at this convention. I watched you when you walk in with your husbands and your wives and how you put your arms around each other. I watched how you treated your children. I watched how you hugged them. And you see, I wasn't doing any of those things when I got here. You see, I had quit loving my wife a long time ago. All I knew was abuse. All I knew was hate. All I knew was anger. All I knew was just pushing people away from me. And I watched you long enough, and what you told me to do, you said it's easy to do it in here. What I want you to do, Frank, is take it home with you. I want you to take it home with you. And what I did was is I watched you, and I tried to take it home with me. I tried to treat my wife and my kids with respect. And my sponsor told me, you know, I went to him, and I said, you know, I got a daughter. And I said, she tells me she loves me when she goes to bed at night. And I said, I can't tell her I love her. And he told me, don't be a dummy. He says, you reach out every time that little girl walks by you and touch her and tell her you love her. He said, she don't know you don't love her. He said, you just tell her, and in time you'll learn to love her. And you know, I got two daughters. And I left his office, and I went home, and I went back to that garage. And every time those two kids walked by, I reached out and tried to touch them, and they ducked. And I told them, I love you. And I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. And it took a long time for me to start meaning it. But I kept doing it because he told me to do it, and you told me to do it. And I watched you do it, and it was okay for you, so I did it. And you told me how to treat my wife. You told me to put my arms around her. You told me when I come in, just like my sponsor told me, he says, when you get home, ask her how her day was, and then stand there and listen. I used to wiggle my toes in my shoes. I didn't do what Mary Ann did. I wiggled my toes in my shoes. I wasn't interested in her. I was interested in me. I wanted to inflict myself on everybody around me that stand still and listen. But I had to stand there and listen to her. And you know, in time, by doing that, day after day after day and going home, I started becoming interested in what she was saying. Not all the time. My sponsor tells me I'm never going to rise above wonderful. He said, all I'm going to be is a human being. And so I stood there and I listened to her. And I kept doing the things you told me to do. My sponsor told me I had to be self-supporting through my own contributions. And he told me to get a job. And what I did is I didn't know how to get a job. And he told me to suit up and show up. And he told me about getting the want ads and to make the calls and to show up at the interviews. And he said, take the first job you're offered. And I became a security guard. And that's beneath my station. I'm a combat veteran and I'm a cop. And by God, I'm something to be conjured with. And I don't want to be no $3.75 an hour security guard. And I took that job and I went to work at midnight after the meetings. And when I got my first paycheck, I stood there and I cried. I couldn't believe it. If I didn't need the money, I wouldn't have cashed it. I'd have framed it. Instead, I Xeroxed it and framed it. But it's the first honest money I'd earned in a long time. You see, I had ripped people off all my life. And what happened was, hell, there's times today I look at that Xerox copy of the check and think, I wonder if they'll cash that. It's still in the frame. I won't try to cash it today. But I felt good about that job, and I felt good because that's the first honest money I had earned. And what I've had to do is I kept judging myself by my intentions, and all of you people were judging me by my actions. And what my sponsor told me I had to do is he said, you have to start changing your actions. I had to quit using these ethnic terms that I used. I had to quit using four-letter words. I had to start learning how to speak again because he told me that you can't cuss and you can't act that way. And I had to change how I was living. I had to do a 180-degree turn. And I had to start being gentler with people. And I had to quit doing that attitude that I had, and I had to quit trying to push you away. And I had to start doing those things. And what I believe in my life today is that most of the time, when I let it be, my life is God-directed through sponsor direction. And that's how it works for me, you see. Because without my sponsor, I really don't think I'd be here today. I wouldn't be anywhere because I know where I was without him. And I don't know where I'd be without the old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, they came in before me and they're walking that path for me. They're running point. I don't have to. They're showing me how to do it if I'll just open my damn eyes and watch them. And the easiest thing for me to do is to be loving in these meetings. The hardest thing for me to do is to take these 12 steps home with me. That's where it's hard to work the program. It's hard to work the program at the job. That silly bastard running the company don't know how to do it. I need to show him. Look, I'm sober. Let me show you how it's done. Having a job in sobriety is the hardest thing I've got. It's the hardest thing I have to do in sobriety is keep employed. And I don't know why. Hell, I didn't have that problem in drinking. But I've got to take the program outside with me because out there is where it counts. In here it's easy because, you see, I know how you feel behind your belt buckle and you know how I feel. You know how I feel. And I've got to keep doing these things. I've got to keep taking the actions. I've got to get the commitments and I've got to go to the meetings and I've got to listen. I've got to believe in a God. And I do believe in a God. And I can say God, and it's not a three-letter word that I'm ashamed of anymore. And I got to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Alcoholics Anonymous has put God, AA, and Al-Anon in our home. Because without God, AA, and Al-Anon, we wouldn't have a home. My wife attends Al-Anon meetings. And she's involved in Al-Anon. And I let her work her program, and she allows me to work my program. And we do our thing like you've heard here today. And you know, sometimes I have more time on my hands than she does, so I help her with her program. That's no problem. I can do that. She's never had a break. She did her inventory. I said, you don't have to. I've got a typed copy. Give it to your sponsor. But she allows me to do my program, and she allows me to go to a lot of meetings, and I go to meetings almost every night. And I got four or five regular meetings that I attend, and she allows that. And I got four children, but my middle daughter that's 16, she went to Alateen for a while. And she appears to be a normie, and she's a lovely girl. And I got to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous, that hasn't given me the clothes that I'm wearing. Alcoholics Anonymous hasn't given me these clothes. If you want clothes, go down to Mervyn's or Kmart or wherever the hell you buy your clothes. We don't issue them here. What you got to do is get a job, become self-supporting, and buy your clothes. Alcoholics Anonymous hasn't given me the car I'm driving. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't a car dealership, for Christ's sakes. You have to get a job, you have to work, you have to make payments, and you have to do those things. Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not a job service or an employment agency. I had to get the one ads, and I had to take sponsored direction and find a job. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't some social club for me. I'm dealing with a life or death disease here. And I believe that if I don't do the things I'm supposed to do, I'll die from this disease or go crazy. And I know we have a lot of fun here. And I know that there's a lot of lovely ladies here. But since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous and with my sponsor in this group, I haven't had to validate myself with another woman. You see, I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe in my wife, and I love my wife. And this last Monday, we were married for 18 years. And she's seen the good and the bad, and it's time that I give her the good. And I feel that she has earned that. And I have to do that because she's a lovely lady. And I'm glad that we're married. And I'm glad that I can share my life with her today. Because I sure tromped over hers long enough. And we can have a lot of fun here. And this is an honest program. And it's a truthful program. And my sponsor tells me I can think anything I want to think as long as I don't act on it. And I lust after a lot of you women in here. Because you are some foxes. I just don't act on it. Not today. Short-term gain, long-term pain. I don't need it. But I got to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to sit down at night and eat a meal and I don't throw it up. Alcoholics Anonymous allows for me to stand in my bathroom and shave in the morning and I can look in the mirror. You see, the first 3 or 4 years I was sober, I used to walk around shaving because I couldn't stand to look at the guy in that mirror. I hated myself so bad I wanted to die. But today I can stand and most of the time look in that mirror and I like the guy that I see in there because I'm doing the best I can today. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to lay down at night, put my head on the pillow, and I sleep all night. And that's a gift, because I didn't sleep all night when I got here. I used to wake up and search the house and wake up soaking wet and wake up full of fear and that anxiety, and I don't have to do that no more. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous fills up my holes the way alcohol used to. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to feel like a human being most of the time. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to show up at work and to give an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. Alcoholics Anonymous and the principles and the traditions here allows me not to make this fun and games and to hit on everybody and to be cute. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to feel like a man most of the time. The one thing that I've always wanted to be, Jim said it on Thursday night, Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to show up. When I say I'm going to be somewhere, I'm there. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to dress up and stand in front of you so I can be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the greatest gift that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is that family at home. Besides my two brothers at Sober, I have the two children at home, and I've got two that are away from home, and those two at home ducked and dodged every time I walked by. And I got to tell you that one of the greatest gifts is I've got a little 12-year-old at home now, and she was 6 years old, and she wasn't telling me she loved me or hugging me, and I'd been going home and telling her and touching her and trying to get close to her, and she wouldn't let me. And I was about 3 years sober, and I was getting ready to go to a meeting, and we'd moved out of that garage and off the floor, and we'd moved into a little house, and we got real furniture now that some people would give us and stuff. And I'm getting ready for a meeting, that little girl just taking her bath, and she was ready for bed, and she come running by that chair I was sitting in, and she stopped and she looked at me, and she crawled up in my lap, and she put her arms around me, and she gave me a kiss, and she said, "I love you." And that was the first time in her life, and she was 6 years old, that she had ever said, "I love you" to me. And the first time she had ever kissed me. That's what you've given me, you see. And the feeling I had that night, you can't get out of a bottle. You can't get that out of a bottle of whiskey. And you know, she's been doing it a lot since then. You know what the little tyke did? She's 12, and she went out and took golf lessons to learn to play golf so she could be with me. You see, that can't happen to me. And my oldest daughter, my 16-year-old, she made cheerleader, and I got to hug and I got to cry with her and tell her how happy I was with her and how happy and proud I was of her. And we got to share that moment, and that was good. And you people allowed that to happen by your example and by telling me to take it home with me. Those are the gifts you give me. I can lay down at night with my wife and put my arms around her, and I can tell her that I love her. And she puts her arms around me and says, "I love you too." That can't happen from where I came, you see, because they were terrified of me. And life isn't all just bed of roses. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, bad things happen. Bad things happen. My father has a blood clot on the brain and Alzheimer's, and he's dying. And my oldest daughter, that's 24-year-old, had disowned me because she said I was the reason for her problems, and she had never lived with me. But she blamed me. And I had to let her do that, and I called my sponsor crazy, and he said, "Why don't you just let her be her, and you be you, and you keep doing what a dad does. You send her a card on her birthday and for Christmas, and you just keep being there for her should she ever change her mind and come back to you." And you know, April of this year, in January, I got a call from her, and she said, "Dad, I'm getting married in April, and I want you to come back." And she apologized for how she was. You see, I stayed with you long enough and was an example long enough that she called, and in April, I went back to her wedding, and I got to visit my father. And, you know, I didn't want to do that because that's tough for me because I've become a wimp in sobriety. And I knew that was going to be hard. And what my sponsor said was, "Why don't you just suit up and show up and know that he's got a God in his life, just like you do. And why don't you just support your mom and help take care of him?" And, you know, I went back there and I did that. And I took him to the wedding. And he disrupted it and raised hell. He don't know what he's doing. But I was proud to be with him because, you see, I wanted to be like him. And if I wasn't sober, that wouldn't have happened. You know, I had a son that the hardest thing I've had to do in sobriety was put him out when he was 15 years old. But I called my sponsor, and he said, "You can't have drugs and alcohol in your home. You have to put that young man out." And I packed his clothes up and set him on the porch. And I put him out. And he lived on the streets of Hollywood, and he run wild for a long time. And he's a drug addict and alcoholic. And that was tough to watch. And I watched him almost die. And I watched him be arrested for murder. And I watched him be arrested for robbery, and I watched him do the things that I was doing. And he got put in prison, and I didn't go to his trial because I didn't help put him there. And he was still drinking and using. And my sponsor and you people said, why don't you just stay here and be an example for him? And I had to ask you what the difference was between release and indifference. And you said, do you still love him and still care about him? And I said, yes. And you told me then you've released him. If you didn't care, you're indifferent. And he spent 5 years in prison. And I went down to see him in December, and he was clean and sober. And last Tuesday, he got released. And he's in my home group. And that can't happen. And he has a sponsor. And he's gone to a meeting every night since he's been out. And I don't tell him how to do his program. It ain't none of my business. All I can do is be an example, and I learned that from you. I've lost a business in sobriety. I lost all my money in sobriety, and I've had to start over. None of those things that I just mentioned would a drink make any better or change. And I learned that from you. And what I've got to do is stay here with you. Now, the things I've said today mean nothing to you. They don't mean anything. What I've done here today is I've said what I used to be like, and I need to hear that. I need to hear what an animal I was, how angry and hateful and disregard for human life I had. I need to see the miracle of how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I look back on it, to me, it's truly a miracle that I'm alive and sober today. I need to see how I got to you people, and I need to hear how my life is today. I need to hear that I'm centered. I got a little dignity most of the time. I try to do the things that you've shown me how to do, and I've got to hear myself say that I have a good life, because, you know, sometimes I forget and I lose my gratitude. So the things that I've done here at this podium today are for Frank Jones. They're for me. I'm a drunk, and I'm a bad drunk. But today I'm a human being. I'm never going to rise above that, and I try not to do the things I used to do, and I try not to drink today. And I try to live in today, because today's all I got. Yesterday is gone, and I can't change a thing. I'd go back and change a lot of things if I could, but I can't. And I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, so I have to stay sober, and I have to do the things today, right now, because all I've got's right now. And if I put enough right nows together, I'll get to tomorrow. And that's what you've taught me. And I think that the only thing that you should remember, it was read at the Thursday night meeting, and you probably didn't even pay any attention to it. And to me, it's one of the most important things I hear at every meeting, because I watch the old-timers, and they're the ones that I keep my eye on. And what that thing said Thursday night that was read, if you're new or used tonight, keep it right in front of you and try to remember those words. And what those words are is the first line of chapter 5, and the first line of chapter 5 says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thank you.